Hello, and welcome to Countries That Don't Exist Anymore. Countries That Don't Exist Anymore is a historical entertainment podcast about countries that don't exist anymore.
Oh, is it?
This week on Countries That Don't Exist Anymore, we delve into the Anglo-Saxon Kingdom of Mercia.
Countries that don't exist anymore, they used to exist but not anymore. Now you know what this podcast is for, it's countries that don't exist anymore.
What was Mercia?
One of seven medieval Anglo-Saxon kingdoms that we now know as the Heptarchy. And they consisted of Northumbria, Wessex, Essex, Sussex, Kent, East Anglia and Mercia. Now, even though we call it the Heptarchy, which means seven, there were actually more than just seven kingdoms in this period. For example, Mercia also controlled three smaller kingdoms, known as the Kingdom of Lindsay, the Hervica, and the Magansata. But when we talk about Mercia, we also include those kingdoms in that. Also, Northumbria was occasionally divided into smaller kingdoms, known as Dara and Benicia. But to keep things simple, let's just talk about there being seven. So, let's just wipe all I've just said from history.
Great. Where was Mercia?
Mercia occupied an area of central England, a lot of which we now think of as the Midlands. At its height, however, Mercia was way beyond that. Its borders span from Liverpool in the northwest, down to Wales in the west, as far as Somerset in the south, across to London, over to East Anglia, and up to the River Humber in the northeast. Basically, if you're around at this time and you live south of the River Humber, there's a good chance you answer to Mercia. If you live north of the Humber, you'd be in Northumbria. And that's why that's called that. The capital of Mercia was Tamworth, now home to Nibbles Cafe and Drayton Manor Theme Park. But who needs white-knuckle rides? Listeners of this podcast will learn that medieval history is the real roller coaster.
Oh my God, we're about to learn about the 10th century!
By 910, Mercia had been split almost diagonally, with the southwest portion falling under the influence of Wessex and the northeast portion going to the Vikings into a Norse-occupied area called Danelaw. Subsequently, Mercia didn't exist anymore. And that's the end of the show.
Ed, can we flesh it out a little bit?
No, for God's sake!
When was Mercia?
515 AD to 918 AD, which is 403 years. Now that's pretty good going, given that by comparison, the United States has only notched up 241 years so far. And it seems like their latest president isn't that interested in beating the record. Although many Donald Trump fans do coincidentally refer to their country as Merca.
Murica.
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 Mercy. Mercia.
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 Mercia. Flip. Yeah.
Also, Mercia comes from the Old English word Murca or Mercer, meaning border people. See? Just like today, they're all about the border defences. But we'll come on to that later when we talk about Offa's Dyke. Mercia's golden age was the 8th century. Now, before that, in the 7th century, Northumbria had really dominated England. And in the 9th century, Wessex came into its own.
Who were the Mercians?
According to the ancient scribe, the Venerable Bede, the Mercians were descendants of the Angles, a people who'd migrated over from Germany. In fact, it's not quite as straightforward as that, because the Mercians weren't just Angles, they were actually a mixture of lots of different peoples. For one thing, the name Angles and Saxons were often used interchangeably. So it's not like a whole nation of Angles pick up sticks and then move to England from Germany. And even then, the Anglo-Saxon migration which happened at this time wasn't just two peoples called the Angles and Saxons, but also included people called the Jutes, or they later thought of themselves as Jutes, the Frisians and the Franks. There are still lots of Franks in England to this day, most notably Bruno and Lampard. Anglo-Saxon migration is thought to have happened in the early 6th century, although it may have happened over a much longer period, because the Saxon shore defences were built in the late Roman era to guard against Saxon raids. Most of what we know about Mercia comes from a Northumbrian monk called the Venerable Bede. And this monk was born in, and I'm not kidding here, Moncton. That's right, Moncton, home of all the monks. His most famous work was Historica Ecclesiastica Gentis Anglorum, which for the fellow non-Latin listeners means the ecclesiastical history of the English people. And this was the first work of history in which the AD dating system was used. Yum, 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 yum. According to Bede, after the Roman withdrawal, Britons were having trouble fighting off the Picts, the Irish and others, so they enlisted Saxon mercenaries to fight on their side. See, one of the reasons the northern tribes known as the Picts were such a threat was that the Romano-Britons had been using Hadrian's Wall as a defence. But the Picts, one day, just decided to get into boats and sail around the wall. You know, because there's a sea right next to the land. Because it's an island.
Clever girl.
According to Bede, the Saxons did the fighting and then realised that the Brits were actually pretty badly defended and so got the whole family over. Bede's story is that the sword-swinging German brutes then easily overpowered the effeminate, olive-oil-guzzling Romano Brits. Except this didn't really happen. For one thing, the Brits weren't a pushover. There are many reports of Britons crushing Saxons at various battles. This is actually supposedly the start of the Arthurian legend of King Arthur and the court of Camelot that comes from this period. Later on, Mercian kings were forever having to raid into Wales to assert their authority, and Cornwall remained as a British kingdom for hundreds of years after this time. So the Britons weren't a pushover, and we can prove that as well. If you look even now, the Viking encroachment into Wales isn't that deep. And one of the reasons was because one of the legendary rulers of Gwynedd, known as Rhodri Mor, gave the Vikings such a hard time that they decided to turn around and keep beating up the English instead. Also, the Anglo-Saxons didn't come over as just war bands. A lot of them came over as very poor peasants. They were settlers and refugees as much as they were kings and war bands. So this whole mercenaries who bit the hand that fed them narrative doesn't really ring true. What also seems to support the idea that these were just normal people migrating is that we have archaeological evidence that whole villages and towns in Germany were emptying out. We don't know exactly why the Anglo-Saxons moved to Britain, but the history of Europe basically consists of one group of people giving another group of people a hard time until they move somewhere else. But what happened to the Romano-Britons? Well, one way to find out is to look beyond Bede and into the DNA evidence. People seem to be more strongly Anglo-Saxon in the east of England, whereas the further west you go, the more it seems to be mixed with indigenous British DNA. For a long time, it was assumed that the Romano-Britons were simply massacred by the invading Saxon brutes. But if this is so, where are the mass graves? While some Britons almost certainly migrated to Brittany when the Roman legions left Britain, many remained powerful, holding lands in Cornwall, Wales and various regions long after the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms were established. Maybe there weren't British massacres. Maybe some had massacres. Ah, thank you. So, rather than Anglo-Saxons completely replacing the Britons, the Anglo-Saxon invasion was as much cultural as it was genetic. Last season's toga was swapped for the On Fleek battle axe. Many Britons just started dressing like Anglo-Saxons, talking like Anglo-Saxons, and being buried like Anglo-Saxons. Just because women in the 1990s had a Rachel from Friends haircut, it doesn't mean that those women would test positive for Jennifer Aniston's DNA.
I even thought of getting back together with you. We are so over.
In the same way that there weren't really no pure Anglo-Saxons, Mercia was really just a big mixed confederacy of people. Mercia was much less about straightforward territorial expansion and much more about dominating the surrounding kingdoms. Right, so, for example, the great King Penda, who ruled between 628 and 655, spent much of his time killing East Anglian kings and generally duffing up everybody around him without annexing any great swathes of territory. You see, Mercia wasn't really about some King Alfred-style conquest for an English nation. Mercia was much more about uniting kingdoms around them. So it was more of a Mercian defence league.
MDL! MDL! MDL!
Ugh, enough of that.
Later chroniclers have the first family of the Mercians descending from a chieftain called Ickle. Ickle is said to have been a king of the Angles in Germany before landing in East Anglia in 515, winning a battle against the Britons and then working his way west to control land in the Midlands by 527. True or not, the subsequent early ruling family of Mercia were known as the Icklingas, or family of Ickle. Athens had Hercules, Rome had Romulus, Mercia had Ickle. Cutest little founding dynastic king of all time. He must have had a little marshmallow belly and giggled when you tickled him.
Stop tickling me, naughty boy.
What kind of government did Mercia possess?
There's a reading of history, a favourite of the US founding fathers, which suggests that the roots of parliamentary democracy were found in the Anglo-Saxon world through the Witan, a council of wise men. The idea was that this Witan council balanced the power of the monarchy, but given that there was no machinery of government other than what the king thought best, in effect the Witan was just a huge rubber stamp on the king's decisions. Incidentally, we can surmise that the character of the king was all important, because when Mercia had effective kings, it did well. When it didn't, it didn't. While the machinery of the Roman state could weather a Caligula or a Nero and keep on trucking, if a Mercia king didn't know how to biff someone over the head with a battle axe, it was game over. Putting that all to one side, the Witan weren't without influence. They did have some say in appointing a king, but this was really at times when it wasn't obvious who would be next in line. For example, if a king snuffed it in battle and hadn't left a son handy to take over. Which happened a surprising amount. On the other hand, Mercia was really more of an aristocracy than it was an absolute monarchy. The king was chosen from amongst the Aethlings, or princes, of noble families. Since all noble families had a dynastic claim, this made things pretty unstable. In fact, by the time the Vikings rocked up, much of the energies of the great kingdoms of Northumbria and Mercia had already been spent in fighting great dynastic wars and feuds. Wessex arguably weathered better against the Vikings than the Mercians did, because they'd had a period of relative stability, because the crown had been passed stably between relatives.
Where, Geralt?
So strong were the aristocracy in Anglo-Saxon society, in fact, that noblemen could actually kill people and then pay off the family the amount that person was worth in a system called Wehrgeld. Were means man, like werewolf means man-wolf. Werewolf. Where is wolf? The werewolves werewolves? The wolves werewolves? The Wolverhampton Wanderers werewolves?
Can we get back to the script, please?
There's a script.
It says script.
Lol times a million, Phil. You're right. The purpose of Wehrgeld was to stop dangerous blood feuds from spiralling out of control before there was anything as formal as a police force or the army or law courts. You would owe the full value of a man if you completely killed him. Meanwhile, different body parts had different values. The Franks, for example, placed high value on an archer's fingers because they were extremely important to him. By that rationale, you could probably lop off the Pope's penis for free.
Mamma mia!
In 8th century Kent, a nobleman was worth 300 shillings, whereas a freeman was worth 100 shillings, and slaves, of course, were worth much less than that. By the way, 1 shilling was the price of a cow.
Welcome to Burger Thane. Can I take thine order?
1 cow's worth of burgers for my warband here. Right, warband? Yeah, nice one.
Nice one.
Nice
could,
one.
Could,
yeah.
could I get a McFlurry?
No, this is burger thing.
Oh, yeah, don't do a minute.
No.
Oh, okay.
1 car worth of burgers, that's 1 shilling.
Damn, I've only got a 10 shilling coin. I'll have to kill a slave and get some change from the family.
It's time once again for Mercy and King Top of the Pops. In attendance, Lee Decker, king for a year in 826 and then got himself mangled by pesky East Anglians, not half mate.
In at number 9, Ecrith was king for 141 days, then he died. Whoops a daisy!
Down 2 and 8, it's Bjornwulf. He cost Mercia its supremacy after losing to Wily Wessex at the Battle of Ellendon in 825. What a nada.
Holding at 7, it's Wiglaf. Might have kept his hair on, but he couldn't keep the throne.
Diddled with some nuns and murdered by his bodyguard. It's naughty old Ethelbald in at 6. 6-6. Cripes.
Everybody claimed to be a descendant of him, so he must have been doing something right. In at number 5, it's Pyama.
Is there a wolf there? No, there's a wolf here, and he's the last Mercian breadwinner. He's in at number 4.
Number 3 this week is the self-styled emperor of Mercia himself. It's Caelwulf.
In at 2, King Bender. He defeated just about everybody going, but only when he got himself killed at the Battle of Windwade against Benicia. What a wally.
And this week's top Mercian king, taking the top spot with his new hit, Live and Let Dyke, it's
Arthur.
9th century Welsh Wessex-based scholar Asser wrote,
"There was in Mercia in fairly recent times a certain vigorous king called Offa, who terrified all the neighbouring kings and provinces around him, and had a great dyke built between Wales and Mercia from sea to sea."
Offa might be most famous for Offa's dyke, a 2.4 metre high, 70 mile long earthwork defence of Mercia's western border with the Welsh Kingdom of Powers, who were an off-again, on-again thorn in mighty Mercia's side. This was no random hill of mud. No, the route of this dike took advantage of natural contours of the land, creating the best possible defences and giving the best view to the west. The resources and labour required to build the dike attest to Offa's power, influence and general aversion to all things Welsh. It also suggests that if he were around today, he wouldn't like the music of Tom Jones. The great King Offa ruled over a powerful centralised court that looked to the empire of Charlemagne for inspiration. Offa even minted some pretty fancy coins to make himself look like a Roman emperor, and later King Cernwulf even styled himself emperor on one charter, but most kings were just the nobles with the most support. Also, calling yourself Emperor of Mercia is a bit like calling yourself Grand Vizier of the Stationery Cupboard or Sultan of Shed. Offa made his son joint king while he was alive and even tried to have his son anointed by an archbishop as the legitimate successor, but it was never really that simple. In fact, Offa had so much trouble convincing the Archbishop of Canterbury, based in Wessex, to do this that he set up another archbishopric in Lichfield, within the borders of Mercia, just to get the job done. Offa also had some coins minted with Arabic script around the outside, proclaiming the general awesomeness of Allah. Was Mercia joining the Caliphate? No. Either the coins looked to ape the great trading currencies coming out of the Islamic world, or possibly these coins were to be accepted abroad. Either way, Mercia was in no way cut off from the rest of the world. In fact, such was the fame of Offa, he was even pen pals with the badass Uber Emperor Charlemagne. There was no doubt that Offa was extremely powerful and known throughout the continent, but in his correspondence, it was clear that Offa fancied himself on par with Charlemagne, but Charlemagne was having none of it.
"My Lord Charles, by the grace of God, King of the Franks and the Lombards, Patrician of the Romans, Vanquisher of the ungodly pagans, I write, my lord, to request your protection of Mercian nobles who make pilgrimage through your mighty lands."
Who is this?
Is this one of these chain mail letters? My army has plenty of chain mail already. Yours snootily, Charlemagne. P.S. Who is this?
What we don't know.
Unfortunately, we don't know as much as we'd like about Mercia. To be remembered in history, you really need someone to write about you. Someone to big you up in the form of a chronicler. Like a medieval Flavor Flav. Northumbria to the north had the monk, the Venerable Bede, and Wessex to the south had Alfred the Great's Welsh monk, Asser. Either Mercia simply didn't have a superstar chronicler, or much of its records were destroyed. Some of this was rightly blamed on Viking raids on monasteries.
Destroy the records! Take that, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band! Be vanquished, the best of yes!
In actual fact, plenty of monasteries were abandoned before the coming of the Vikings. The monastery at Hartlepool, for example, seems to have been abandoned in the late 8th century during political upheaval, but it suited the later narrative of the devilish hordes attacking Christendom before Christianity's ultimate victory. This means that Mercian history can be patchy and reliant on chronicles from other kingdoms or from the work of archaeological study, particularly of hordes. Oh, and by hordes, we mean treasure hordes, like the Staffordshire hordes, and not the Mongol horde. Incidentally, hordes were only prominent during the early Anglo-Saxon period, when they still worshipped Woden and other Germanic gods. As soon as they converted to Christianity, however, burying hordes stopped, and we learn a lot less about the Anglo-Saxons from that time period. Nice going, Christianity.
Boo!
The other reason why documents might be thin on the ground is that the language of Mercia was Old English. Or, as they might have called it at the time, English. I mean, after all, what's old to us was new to them.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Boar's Face Tavern Comedy Night. First up, we've got missionary and master of ribaldry. Please welcome to the stage with a big round of applause, Sir Peter of Kay.
Do you remember the days that are older than the days we got now? Do you remember the late Roman era? What was that like? Remember Venerable Bede on the front row there? He knows what I'm talking about. Oh, don't pretend you don't. Oh, do you remember togas, eh? Do you remember Roman-style underfloor eating? What was that about? Hey, madam, bit chilly now, isn't it? Bit chilly downstairs. Garlic bread?
After the 11th century Norman conquest of England and influx of French, Old English went out of fashion and stopped having much value. Some of these huge, unreadable Mercian tomes were recycled for new books or used as rather elaborate paperweights. There's evidence that at least one Anglo-Saxon tome was even used as a paint pot stand in a monastery. You can see the ring of paint. Guardians of knowledge through the Dark Ages, ladies and gentlemen, nice one, monasteries.
Boom.
Mercian dynasty.
Mercian dynasties can often be traced via the first letter of the king's name. So, Pibba's son was Penda, Penda's son was Pieda. The W dynasty. Wiglaf's son was Wigmund, whose son was Wigstan. The C dynasty. Kernwulf's son was Sinhelm, his brother was Churwulf.
If dynasties see to pay at anyone with a speedy Mercian monarch premier boarding pass, please, can you make your way to the front for boarding?
Actually, it's really important I board now. I've got a really important invasion.
Can I just check your pass, please?
Yes.
Sorry, King Wiglaf. Back of the queue, please.
Ruddy hell.
Churwulf. Wolf here. Kernwulf. Where's Wolf? The werewolves...
Ed. Don't start that again.
Oh, did Anglo-Saxon England have a wolf problem? Yes, because lots of people were called Wolf. Athelwulf meant noble wolf, whereas Wolf here meant wolf army. These days, no one listens to a boy who cries wolf. Back then, if you went into a bar and cried wolf, half the drinkers would have thought you were talking about them.
Wolf!
Yeah?
You talking to me?
What? Is that me?
Was that me?
Wolf or him?
I think it was him.
Because my mate Wolf's here.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Wolf, I think this guy Wolf's trying to talk to you.
Three,
2, 1. I can assure you that while the Mercians weren't Dungeons & Dragons RPG nerdlingers, they did give their swords cool names like
Prandrek, Blade of Power,
or
Shannonbrand, Keenblade.
These days we just have
Russellbrand, Disappointing,
and
Ownbrand, basically indistinguishable.
This is because the Anglo-Saxons loved war. In fact, the name Saxon comes from Siax, which means short sword or knife.
Expanding Anglo-Saxon territory and influence.
Valor, heroism, and laying down your life for the Lord were worth nothing if you couldn't brag about it over a few beers or meads or ales. Now, drunken karaoke wasn't exactly huge in Anglo-Saxon England, but stories were massively popular. Number one epic, Beowulf. There's that wolf again. Epic, yes, but this isn't Lord of the Rings. The Anglo-Saxon battles would have involved a couple of thousand men at most, not massive loads of CGI hordes. The king would usually have a war band of 1,000 or so in strength, and that was about it. Massive peasant armies, meanwhile, were called fjords and could be raised, but this wasn't common until Alfred had to take on the Vikings later on.
Religion.
Mercia was the last kingdom to convert to Christianity in the late 7th century. Bede states that conversion was finally assured when King Walthyr
658-675
appointed a guy named Chad to be Bishop of Lichfield, to which the Latin scholar Chad responded, Awesomus Maximus, Brocephus! Before that, Walthyr's dad, King Pender,
who reigned from 626 for 30 years according to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle,
was a pagan, but he was very happy for everybody else to convert to Christianity. Pender's thing was he just didn't like hypocrisy. He didn't mind what faith you are and what faith you outwardly expressed, as long as you actually believed in it. Either you believe that we're inhabited by the souls of 50 billion year old space aliens imprisoned on this planet by Lord Xenu, or you're just an SP.
SP, isn't that suppressive person? It's quite a niche Scientology reference there, Ed.
Saxon peasant.
Oh.
Being a Scientologist, when you drive past an accident, it's not like anyone else. As you drive past, you know you have to do something about it because you know you're the only one that can really help.
The power of the church grew in Mercia, with the Roman church establishing monasteries and churches. As they grew in influence, monasteries began to be filled with the children of wealthy nobles, which turned the institutions from holy, devout, quiet places suddenly to student unions for rich kids. And unlike later monasteries, Anglo-Saxon monasteries often contained both monks and nuns. That's right, co-ed. It's a boarding school boy's wet dream. English religious places became the most debauched in Europe. King Athelbald,
716-757,
apparently used nunneries as knocking shops, where he would father a large army of bastards with noble nuns.
You crafty little bastard.
It was like medieval Tinder, except swiping someone probably led directly to their death.
Swipe right, swipe right, swipe right, I'll swipe left.
His successor, Offa, spent time killing off Athelbald's illegitimate spawn, which is why he was so keen to get his successor consecrated, in case anyone thought that it would be okay to kill his son, Ecgfrith. And where might they get the idea that regicide was cool? Oh yeah, Offa.
I, King Offa of the Mercians, decree that from now on it's no longer cool to bump off heirs to the throne. Starting from... now.
It is I, Beored, son of Ethelbald. I have returned from pilgrimage from Rome to claim Mercia, my rightful kingdom.
Pass me my sword. Okay, now that one didn't count, right? Starting from... now.
We've talked a lot about the pinnacle importance of the king, but how do we tell when a Mercian monarch is powerful? Tribute. The more tribute you can squeeze out of your subjects, and even neighbouring kingdoms, the more powerful you are. It's basically glorified protection money. My lord Offa, I can tax the churls no more. We can provide no more tribute.
Ixrith, your lack of respect troubled me. Who's the godfather to your favourite cow?
You are, my lord.
Right. And it would be a shame if anything were to happen to that cow. Like if she was standing in the field, minding her own business, sweating flies in a carefree manner with her tail, and then, bam, a couple of Viking schmucks tip her over and she can't get up, because cows ain't got a self-righting mechanism.
Very well, my lord.
And in reciprocation, I'm going to make you a small action figure of me.
Oh, sire, that won't be necessary.
No. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
Tributes were calculated in hides, notionally the amount of land needed to sustain oneself and one's family. These tributes allowed Offa to build his dike, which in return protected his investment. If the Welsh plunder and burn, there'll be less tribute, and the position of the monarch could be fatally undermined. Successful kings like Penda or Offa attracted their best soldiers because their record in battle suggested that if you followed one of these successful monarchs, you get a share in the glory. You follow a king because you're impressed with him, not because of any legal obligation or abstract state apparatus. If the people who run your estates, known as reeves at the time, aren't afraid of the king, they will just steal from him. If the warriors don't respect him, they won't turn out and fight for him. So, it doesn't take much for a kingdom like Mercia to fall into ruin.
Decline and fall.
At the Battle of Ellendun in 825, King Ecgbert of Wessex defeated King Bjornwulf of Mercia. Wessex escaped Mercian domination and spread its control over Sussex, Kent, and Essex. East Anglia also broke away from Mercia, which was disastrous because East Anglia was the home to Mercia's mint. Beowulf invaded East Anglia but was killed. The next year, Lucida went in there but was also killed. East Anglia became Mercia's Vietnam. In 830, King Wiglaf did restore Mercian prestige and extended power over Berkshire, as well as regaining control of London from Wessex. But the permanent independence of East Anglia and the hegemony of the West Saxons meant that Mercia started to decline. And then in the late 9th century, along came the Vikings. Note: Vikings were known as Northmen, or sometimes Danes by the Anglo-Saxons, as Viking just means to raid. It's a verb, i.e. we will go a Viking. Hopefully, historians 1500 years from now won't make the same mistake. New Zealanders, for example, like to get into huge plastic balls and roll down hills. Hopefully, historians won't refer to them as Zorbings. Although it'd be pretty cool if they did. Although Viking incursions had been happening for the past 100 years, Mercia's fate seemed sealed after the great heathen army landed in Britain in 865 and came for nothing short of conquest. The great heathen army first popped into Mercia in 868 after conquering York. They wintered in Nottingham, presumably because there's a great Christmas market there.
Hey Olaf, come and have a gander at these tasteful baubles. Wouldn't they go lovely hanging off the tree?
I prefer using the skulls of my enemies.
What is it with you and the skulls?
With the help of Wessex, the Mercians laid siege to Nottingham before heroically paying the Vikings to go back to York. It's a bit like in EastEnders, where the father doesn't approve of his daughter's fiancé, so offers him a bit of money to clear off.
How much will it cost for you to clear off and leave my daughter alone?
There's no amount of money that's going to make me give up Sharon.
Here's 20 notes.
Oh, sweet, blinding. Thanks very much. Cheers, bye.
The Mercians paid the Vikings off at the end of 873 before the Vikings returned to Mercia, made their base at Repton, the resting place of Mercian kings, and then conquered it in 874. Good value for money there. They stuck Ceolwulf on the throne as the puppet king, and then the Vikings went back to stamping on the rest of the English. Enter Alfred the Great, King of Wessex, who, after burning some cakes, gave up cookery and instead defeated the Vikings at the Battle of Edington in 878. Mercia was shared between himself and the Vikings and was absorbed into the Viking area of England known as the Danelaw. With puppet king Ceolwulf's death in 879, there died the last king of Mercia. Alfred took the title King of the Anglo-Saxons, so basically the idea of a kingdom of Mercia was over. Mercia lived and died by the strength of its kings. And this is why we have to mention one more character in the Mercian story, Ethelflaed, daughter of King Alfred. Born in 868 or 870, at the height of the Viking invasions, she became the greatest British female badass since Boudicca. The whole thing was a lot like the Terminator franchise, if you think about it. Alfred married his...
I'm not quite clear. How was it like the Terminator franchise?
It's quite obvious, really, if you think about it. Look. The Vikings, so they're like the Terminators, okay?
Yeah.
And then, like... So if you think, like, in the Terminator, like, John Connor, who's, like... So he's, like, King Alfred, right?
Okay.
And so Ethelflaed is, like, Sarah Connor.
Yeah, but isn't, like...
The mum.
Isn't John Connor the son?
Yeah. But also King... Well,
isn't,
Alfred...
Isn't Alfred the father of Ethelfred?
Yeah. It's father.
So, well, how does this work?
Time travel. Look, have you seen Terminator Genesis?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I mean, it makes a lot more sense than that.
Do you know what? That's the first true thing you've said this podcast.
Alfred married his daughter to a Mercian alderman called Athelred to rule as an outpost of Wessex as Lord and Lady of the Mercians. Now, Ethelflaed's mother was called Aelswith and was from good Mercian stock, so Ethelflaed was accepted by Mercians as one of their own. She was loved by the Mercian people and saw herself as charged by God to defend her people against everybody else. Even after Athelred's death, she went on ruling Mercia on her own, leaving Alfred to get on with defeating the Vikings and building his kingdom. She fortified places like Worcester, Tamworth and Stafford and put them on a war footing. In 907, her reinforcement of Chester led to the repulsion of a Viking attack, which was hot gossip amongst Irish chroniclers. Her troops supposedly threw hot beer and beehives onto the Vikings below.
Eric, you say you like beer and honey, right?
That's right, Olaf. These are my favourite things.
Eric, do you like your beer boiling hot and your honey full of bees?
No, Olaf. I'm pretty conventional in my tastes.
I see. And do you like them served to you by being hurled onto you from above?
I'm really more of a brought to me at the table kind of guy.
I thought so. In which case, we should probably,
Retreat!
In 909, she sent an expedition into the Danelaw to capture the relics of warrior St. Oswald. They were brought back and a priory built at their honour at Gloucester, the new capital of Mercia, restoring pride to the Mercians. As a reprisal, Vikings came raiding into Mercia, but were returning with their captured plunder when they were ambushed and massacred. Three of their kings were killed. The place name? Wednesfield, which means Woden's Field. The birds she had built on the border allowed this lightning attack. These birds weren't just about defence, they were about urban regeneration and building a more prosperous England.
Welcome to Gloucester, new capital of Mercia. With the building of the new priory, Gloucester is hot property. After checking out the sexy essential bones of St. Oswald, why not kick back with a flagon of craft mead and enjoy our exclusive menu of charcuterie treats, including a Viking Faces compote and a trio of free-range organic boar's bull bags. Our exclusive apartment at the Priory comes complete with concierge, landscaped open sewer, and off-street vertical horse racks. Be yourself, be at home. Be Mercia.
Mercia is a subdomain of Wessex Crown Holdings. Terms and conditions apply.
In 917, and with the assistance of Welsh kings and the Scottish King Constantine, Ethelflaed sent an army into Danelaw to capture Derby. And then she captured Leicester in 918. In that same year, the Vikings of York offered her their loyalty, but she died before she could accept it. There seems little doubt that if she were born a little earlier in history, and it was normal for Anglo-Saxons to have queens, she would have been up there with the likes of Offa and Penda. That was countries that don't exist anymore. Every 2 weeks we'll be uncovering countries that you never knew existed, and in fact, don't. Next time, we jump forward to the 19th century and visit the grandiose-sounding Free and Independent Republic of West Florida, which lasted about 3 months. Until then, do exist, and make sure your friends also exist also.
Countries that don't exist anymore, they used to exist but not anymore. Now you know what this podcast is for, it's countries that don't exist anymore.
Hey, thanks for listening to Countries That Don't Exist Anymore, our brand new podcast. Go to ctdeapod.com for episode transcripts and news, and get in touch for questions, comments, and corrections at ctdeapod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at ctdeapod and support the podcast and keep it existing with a 5-star review, and tell your friends for God's sake, even if they don't exist anymore.